Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Superconductivity is having a bit of a moment. This is the concept of developing techniques for transporting electricity with no resistance. And if it is achieved, it has the potential to revolutionise the energy industry, massively lower bills, and help curb global warming. But so far, superconductivity has only been achieved at extreme temperatures, which takes massive energy itself. Now, though, there are claims from South Korea that they can do this at room temperature. So are we looking at a future where trains will now float above the train tracks and your phone might only have to be charged once or twice in its entire lifetime? Professor Aoife Foley is the chair of net zero infrastructure in the University of Manchester and has been running a gimlet eye over these claims. Good morning, Aoife. Can you tell me first, please, what is it that these physicists in South Korea are claiming that they have achieved?
Well, what they're claiming basically is that this LK99, which is a compound of copper, lead, phosphorus and oxygen, is a superconductor at ambient pressure and temperatures up to about 127 degrees Celsius. Now, for us, for the ordinary mortal, that means it will work at room temperature. Now, as you just rightly pointed out, the key challenge has always been with superconductors, and we use them in power grids. We use them in direct drive gearboxes for large wind turbines. They're used in MRI machines. They're used in supercomputing. They need to be cooled and they need to be controlled because they operate at super low temperatures. So in the regions of the minus 100s and 200 degrees Celsius. I'm say, using Celsius rather than Kelvin because that's what people will understand rather than using Kelvin.
And if they've done what they say they've done, is this big news?
It's massive news. And I suppose, no, this isn't the first time we've had these sort of announcements. And interesting, you know, I'm complete science nerd and geek. They're called USOs. So unidentified superconducting objects. And there's actually a little bit of an Irish link in that one of the scientists who's famous in this field for modelling the quantum mechanics of these types of materials is a lady called Sinead Griffith. Now, she's a Trinity graduate. She did her PhD in Switzerland. She won a medal in Switzerland, actually, for general physics. And she works now in the Lawrence Loop Berkeley Laboratory in California. And when the paper came out on the 25th of July in Archive, which is a Cornell database, it's where we sort of, us scientists, go to publish your work to get sort of pre-review from other academics and scientists and labs from around the world. I published there myself. And there was a flurry when the Koreans in the lab in South Korea put up their paper. Some of the big scientists and MLS quantum scientists in the world in the material field started putting up their own responses, and so did Sinead.
Okay, so this has not gone through the process of peer review yet, is what you're saying. Does that make you sceptical about what it is that they're claiming that they've achieved?
No, no, it doesn't, because in actuality, they're being very open in their science, and that's why people do this, so they get their science out there first. And a few years ago, the same group of scientists went to put a paper in Nature. Nature put them through a torturous...
Well, this is the leading science journal in the world.
Well, you know, leading. So there's it's where all scientists would like to go. It's like the Premier League, okay? It's like the World Cup, you know, the last four. So it's where we go to publish when we have some really interesting work. But at the same time, there was other group of scientists who were doing similar work. And Nature published their work and they didn't publish the other group from Korea's work. So they're sort of... Even they contacted, Nature contacted the Koreans to get some sort of information on their paper published in the Cornell database archive, and they declined to respond.
Okay,
seven
so they have reason. Hang on a second, Aoife. They have reason to be sceptical about or cautious about the way that about publishing in the way that most people would like to see them published. But can I get back? Can I get back to how big a deal this is going to be?
Well, it's massive.
If they have achieved what they say that they have achieved, What kind of a revolution in the energy world are we talking about?
Well, it's really significant. So if you look, the two major applications, well, the three major applications for these special material superconductors is basically power grids. So we use aluminium to transfer electricity over high voltage cable lines, over your cable lines. It's in all power lines. And what would happen is about maybe 5 to 6% of electricity is lost in transmission lines from the aluminium because of the magnetic and conducting effects. Mm-hmm. So with these superconductors, and because of the ability that they have no electrical resistance and they repel, it's a Meissner effect, it's called, they repel this electron movement, you reduce and eliminate the loss of electrons from the cable. So that'd be massive. So if we look, so we take the American power system, it's $500 billion annually that's what you're talking about in terms of electricity flow in that network. Just work out 5% of that and it can tell you what you're losing in terms of energy. So that would be, to put it in context, in terms of losing energy.
Okay.
MRI machines, so for simple applications, for a medical application, they use superconductors. And supercomputing for data analytics. So we have a problem here with data centres. It's an issue all over the world. Like what you're talking about is reducing, if you can do what they say they can do, you can quadruple computational capability. You can reduce the energy losses by up to 60%. So you're making it 60% more efficient. Now, what Sinead Griffin has done, she's a modeller. She has now gone away and modelled it. You can see her paper in archive. And what she's come out and said, and this is the problem all the time. Some of these materials, they're rare in nature. This one isn't rare, okay? But it's going to be hard to synthesise in bulk. So to make it in bulk, but like, I mean, if they can crack that nut. Now, some of the labs, one of the labs in China has done one aspect of it already in terms of the magnetic field. So, you know, the reason they've shared it is so people can go away and do it.
Now, the cracking,
and that's what's amazing.
The cracking of the nut sounds like the key thing here, though. I mean, this is not something that is going to be achieved today or tomorrow, that we're saving 60% on our electricity bills. How far into the future, all going according to plan, do you think we're talking about?
Well, to be quite honest, if something like this works, if you look at Moore's Law, okay, so Moore was the guy who was one of the co-founders of Intel, okay, and CEO, when he talks about semiconductors and superconductors and everything like that, and so he basically says that once you can get them scale up, it's every 2 years, the technology, and you can see how that technology has grown. Now, for superconductors,
the technology improves itself?
Advanced exponentially, it keeps on going, okay? It just keeps on going. So if they can get this to work and they can scale it up, they can fabricate it, and it really is the holy grail. You could be seeing this, like, I mean, maybe 15 years, which is massive. Now, if you look at 2030, you know, it's 7 years away. So it's twice that. But like, I mean, this is a massive find. If they can get it to work, it has huge applications.
Okay, so it's not just in the overhead power lines, though. From what you're saying, it's also in all of the devices that we would use, that you would then end up using a hell of a lot less electricity than we do currently.
Well, it's the loss. That's the key thing. So it's those transmission losses. It's the loss and it's the cooling. So it's all of that. So say in an MRI, they use helium and refrigeration gases. That's expensive. It's the same in offshore wind turbines. So if we wanted to scale up, onshore wind turbines, you're talking about 5-6 megawatts, smaller ones, 2.5 megawatts. Okay. So it's like a BMW estate. Okay. I'm just picking that, a Volvo estate, which they won't be making anymore, and a truck. Okay. So a truck is the offshore wind turbine. That's the type of size and scale we're talking about. But the problem is the drive. And if you can use these superconductor materials that are new, and you don't have to use the helium and other gases to cool them, then that has massive, significant applications.
Is there a practical application then here for energy-hungry data centres?
Oh, well, if you can change the superconducting, because you're not going to be using all the air. It's the air handling to cool the data centres. That's the challenge all the time. So when the computers are doing all their work, it's like your fan at the fan at home, mm-hmm. in your own laptop or desktop or your own phone. You put your hand in the back of your phone, you feel it getting warm. If you're working in your own office, your home office, or in an office in a building here in Ireland or in the UK, when you're working it and it's a warm day, You can see, you can hear the fan will start to make more noise because mm-hmm, what it's doing mm-hmm. is it's working harder, which means you're using more electricity to keep your machine okay. working
so
at its optimal
condition.
So scale
that up to data centres, we could have them using an awful lot less energy than they currently
exactly.
are to remain cool. Okay.
Exactly.
Interesting times. Professor Aoife Foley, Chair in Net Zero Infrastructure in the University of Manchester. Thank you.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.